Hey friends, welcome to the Her God Story podcast, where you will always hear a good story to encourage and inspire you in your walk with the Lord. I am so glad you tuned in. I'm your host, Jody Caracosta, ministry leader at Somebody Cares America International, author and traveler on this journey with Jesus. God cares deeply about the overlooked and hurting among us, and He has a special place in His heart for widows and orphans. Over and over in Scripture, He directs us to care for widows and orphans, which is why Somebody Cares created the Widow and Orphan Fund. As a company of women, we can do so much together to take care of the special needs of those He's put in the care of our ministry partners around the world. Recently, we funded the delivery of special care packages to 5 destitute widows in Africa who are struggling to put food on their table for their children. And while this is only temporary help, efforts are underway to provide monthly assistance to them while they seek employment and secure a good living situation. Because of the gifts of so many of you, dear friends, these precious women know that God has heard their cries and has answered with tangible help. Please pray about joining our number with a gift at hergodstory.org and click on Help Now. We even accept cryptocurrency. God is moving around the world. We can at times get so caught up in our own lives, church, and community that we forget God's interest and reach is vast. While He's answering our prayers and intimately supplying our needs, He's also doing that for people all over the world. He is Lord of all the earth, and His desire is that all people from every nation, tribe, and tongue become part of His family. Acts 17:24-28a gives us a glimpse of His plan. The New Living Translation reads, "He is the God who made the world and everything in it. Since He is the Lord of heaven and earth, He doesn't live in man-made temples, and human hands can't serve His needs, for He has no needs. He Himself gives life and breath to everything. He satisfies every need. From one man, He created all nations throughout the whole earth. He decided beforehand when they should rise and fall, and He determined their boundaries. His purpose was for the nations to seek after God and perhaps feel their way toward Him and find Him, though He's not far from any one of us. For in Him, we live and move and exist." My guest, Lana Silk, is an advocate for seeing the people of Iran come to know the Lord. That is where she first encountered Him. Born and raised in Iran, Lana later moved to the UK, where she earned an honors degree in computer engineering, followed by postgraduate studies in marketing communication strategy. Her journey led her into a career in branding, fundraising, and nonprofit consulting, as well as ministry. She served as a church minister, worship leader, and college chaplain, focusing on youth mental health and safeguarding. Now living in Ohio with her husband and 3 children, Lana serves as the chief executive officer of Transform Iran USA. She's committed to bringing freedom and hope to the people of Iran through ministry and humanitarian aid. Fluent in 3 languages and deeply dedicated to advocacy, she considers it her life's calling to be a voice for Iran in the West. She has an amazing story, and I know it will inspire you. Welcome, Lana.
Thank you, Jody.
Can you tell us, take us back to your early years in Iran? It's a nation that's so mysterious to many people in the West. How did your faith journey begin, and in what ways did God shape your upbringing?
So I was born in an Islamic republic in Iran, and so right from the beginning, I was surrounded by Muslim propaganda and a desire by the authorities around me to brainwash me, for want of a better word, and have me sign up to the government's ethos. I was very privileged that my parents were both Christians. My dad is a second generation Christian, and my mom is a first generation Christian. And they brought us up to love Jesus. And really, I think one of the many things I'm so grateful for those early years is an understanding of a living, active relationship with Jesus, where He really is the source of all my needs, the source of my relational needs, my fulfillment, my joy. Everything was God-centered. So I think right from the beginning, the yes was always stronger than the no. You know, what our parents were inviting us into as children was a life of adventure, where God was exciting and alive and supernatural and, you know, active in our lives. And that was always more appealing than the alternative. So we learned from an early, from right from the beginning, what it was to live that way. And I think that's what shaped things for me, because it caused me to, well, my parents modeled to me what it was to live in steps of faith. So from an early stage with them following the voice of God to leave Iran when they didn't know why, and then following his voice to establish a ministry to Iranians, step-by-step obedience, acts of faith, no need for the full picture, just need the step in front of you now. And I think when that's modeled to you as well, and you walk in the good of what it looks like to have the fruit of that in your life, then it shapes your own decision-making.
That is so true. My parents also modeled a living faith for me when I was young. And it was just, there was no question that God is alive and well and loving. And I know not everyone's experience is that. And you certainly lived in an environment where people all around you were not experiencing the goodness of God. I would imagine may have faced some persecution along the way.
Yes, a little bit. Not for me personally, I was a little bit oblivious to some of those dangers. My mom tells me the story of when I was maybe 8 years old, something like that, standing on the balcony in our apartment in Tehran and shouting out to the passersby about how Jesus was Lord and they needed to repent of their sins. They're having to drag me into the house. You cannot shout like that from the balcony. I was naive in it a little bit, but also I think that stemmed from such a pure and sort of passionate faith that surely this is true and surely everyone needs to hear, and what are we going to do about it? So that kind of urgency. So they did a good job of walking that fine line of protecting me so that I didn't walk in fear, but also protecting me so I didn't make the crazy mistakes. But yeah, I mean, I went to an Islamic school. They lined us up in the schoolyard in the mornings and had us shout death to America, death to Israel. Everything was very Islamic, very propaganda driven. And yet, I guess the truth of what I'd experienced in Jesus was so real and so dominating in my thinking that there was never any risk of that being compromised in my mind.
Yeah, that's amazing, because boy, you sure could have just bowed to the cultural pressure, the peer pressure, you know, this is what everybody else believes. Why am I different?
Yeah.
But we are a peculiar people, a chosen generation, a royal priesthood. And you knew that from an early age.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Never afraid to be different. Some of that is personality makeup, I think. And some of that is Christian personality that I guess we all should have a little bit of, which is that we are supposed to be different. And actually our message is a little bit offensive. And I think we have come too far down the line of wanting to appease people and keep people happy, and that, you know, in the name of tolerance, some things get compromised sometimes. And, you know, Jesus was offensive to the powers that be in his day.
Yeah, yeah. To the powers that want to keep us captive, certainly offensive.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, throughout your life, I'm sure you have many, many stories, but, you know, whether in your move to UK or career or relationships, what are some of those pivotal moments where you saw clearly God's hand guiding you and protecting you along the way, starting when you were 8 years old even?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've always been passionate by nature, like in every way. I'm an all-in kind of person. Faith could never have been a bolt-on. It was everything. And some of that was also because of what I'd experienced, and I wanted everything. I didn't want half of it. I think one of my earlier memories that sort of had a shaping effect on my life was when I was baptized. I was sort of 13, 14, 15, that kind of age. And I was, you know, I was very excited. And the way they did baptisms in my church was you would get up and you would give your testimony. And that in itself had been a bit of a journey for me, because I didn't have I was a drug addict and a criminal, and, you know, and I didn't have that story. And I was a little bit sort of, I remember that process of struggling a little bit with, well, my story's not very exciting. And then having a revelation of how exciting it is to go from death to life in the spirit, you know, process. And understanding that that's actually the most dramatic conversion that we can have. So that revelation had led to my testimony that written. I was very excited to share it. And, you know, that was, it was just so, there was so much joy and excitement in the moment. And then after I was baptized, I was at the back and I was getting changed. And I didn't, what I didn't know was that my dad had received a phone call just before I was baptized to let him know that his best friend had just been martyred in Iran. And his best friend was the superintendent of the church in Iran. It's actually ended up being one of the most sort of infamous martyrdoms that took place in those early days of the story changing for what the church looked like in Iran and how it was being persecuted. And so he carried that to him in himself to let me have that sort of excitement of the baptism. And then after, when I was at the back, he got up and shared it with the church. And so then my cousin had come running to the back in floods of tears while I was getting ready, saying, "They've killed him, they've killed him." And I had no idea what she was talking. You know, there was no point of reference. They weren't killing people at that time.
Yeah.
So it took a little while for me to understand what she was saying and exactly what had happened. And I'd known him as uncle. Like, it was, we'd grown up with his kids. It was very close to home. And I remember as I was processing that, the Lord speaking to me saying, "You know what you've just done? That process that you just, you know, that baptism that you just publicly declared that you want to follow me, this is what we're talking about here. You know, this is an all or nothing kind of faith." So it was very, very dramatic in my mind, because it was a reminder of what it means to follow Christ. So yeah, it was more of what I knew, I guess, but it was very, just the timing of it has never been lost for me. Just the, yeah. So that was very, very formative.
When we do baptism, we are dying to our own self and we are raising to new life. And when I was growing up, I listened a lot to a minister named Derek Prince. He was a fabulous Bible preacher, a Bible teacher. And he, I remember hearing him talk one day about our approach to Christianity. And that the communists say we are just dead men walking, and Jesus and Derek Prince said, "No, you know, Christians, we are dead men walking. We are dead to ourselves, and we live for Christ. And whatever happens in our life, we know we're alive for eternity, but we have to die to everything else." And that revelation and that embracing that kind of lifestyle is transformative. It's shocking at first when you think, "Whoa. Wait a minute, you know, this is really it. It's all or nothing." But it's also so freeing when you finally realize that and you embrace it. And I think a lot of people have a hard time embracing that. They think, you know, I really kind of like doing some things my way. And God loves for us to enjoy life and the beauty of His creation. But dying, being realizing that at any moment He could call for that, you know, He could call us in, call us home for His purpose, for His glory. I'm sure that even though there was great hardship, God was glorified through that martyrdom in some way.
Yeah, absolutely. And He continues to be, as that story continues to have ripple effects and new people are exposed to it. Absolutely. I think there is a, like you say, a sort of a freedom that comes in relinquishing our hold on the things that we don't need to hold, letting God be God. You know, we've lived a life of adventure with Him, my husband and I, now with our children, and it's we've taken some steps of faith that have been illogical to humans, and yet so freeing for us, because when God tells you to jump, you jump, and you think, well, it's kind of God's problem now. Like, it's His story. It's, you know, and if He wants me here, then it's His responsibility to provide for me here. So I'm in His care, and it's, yeah, letting Him do His part and us doing our part is very free.
Yeah. Give us an example of just one of those things that you felt like you were just jumping.
Well, there have been a few, and you know, He's very gracious in that He eases us into the next stage. You know, the word talks to us about stretching your tent curtains. Like this, there's a stretch. There is the actual process of stretching is uncomfortable, but it increases the ground that we cover. It increases our territory. It'll increase our legacy, even our impact. And I feel like for me, every step, every decision that I've made, God has stretched me a little bit more into that little bit of a bigger risk, that little bit of a a bigger ask, a bigger dream, a bigger unknown, and then every time a bigger blessing, a bigger impact, a deeper understanding of him, a greater intimacy with him. So, you know, the first one that I remember, well, you know, for me, I made a decision right in my teens that I wouldn't make any life-altering decisions without a prophetic confirmation from God. I think it was kind of a revelation of this letting God be God thing of, well, look, do I really believe that he has a plan and a will for my life? And do I really believe that he's good and he is a God of clarity? So then if I really believe this thing, then why wouldn't he know what I should do in every big decision that I make? And then why wouldn't he tell me what I should do? So that was a revelation I had pretty early on, and right down to, so the first decision, of course, was what college do I go to? And it was a prayerful decision, and actually ended up going somewhere that I hadn't been a plan A, and it was such a big blessing for me, and I met my husband there. And so then every step, you know, with my husband, when we were dating, we sort of reaffirmed this decision. Well, there's no marriage in this without God's confirmation. And then the story of how he confirmed through a vision and through a prophetic word through another person to each of us that we are his best plan for each other. And so we've always lived like that. But the first one that really was a big step for me was when we made a big sort of career change for my husband. Well, a job change. And with that, a big house move. So I was pregnant with our third child. And we bought a house near where my parents live. We had we were settled. I picked out the schools that my kids would go to. And my husband had just been promoted to a director at his company. And, you know, everything was going really well. And my mom was down the road and I was going to have another baby. And then my husband started getting headhunted for a job. And for me, it was just fun. Like, oh, isn't this fun that, you know, you've been noticed by people and they, you know, they want to interview you. And he was keen to explore it. But I think in my head, it was all, well, you're just having some fun here and you're seeing what, you know, what the wider market thinks of you. But of course, I'm not going anywhere. And I remember this mom one saying to me, how do you feel about moving? And I said, no, we're not moving. he's just interviewing. We're not moving. God hasn't said anything. And he hasn't said anything. And we both knew that we wouldn't move without God saying anything. And this place was, you know, like a 2-3 hour drive from our house, which in England is a big deal. That's right across the country. Like in America now, I'm learning everything's shrinking. Like 3 hours is, you know, you go shopping 3 hours away. In England, you don't do that. So it was just a whole different world. We didn't know anyone there. And he came home from one of his interviews and said, I'm really getting excited about this job. I think I want it. And I said, well, you know, we're not moving because God's not saying anything. He said, well, we need to really start praying because my emotions are changing about this. I started digging into the word and everything that I was reading was confirming my own earthly desire to stay. So it was all like the boundary lines have fallen in pleasant places and those kinds of scriptures. We're not going. And then it got a bit more urgent and I thought, no, I really, really need to pray. And that time, nobody knew because he was very senior in his company and we word couldn't get out that this was happening. And so it was just us and our parents that knew that we were even exploring this possibility or that he was. So I thought, well, I'm just going to cast the net wide. So I went on Facebook and this is like 30 years ago now. So it wasn't, Facebook is slightly different to what it was back then.
Yes.
But I put on Facebook, Lana needs to hear God. Anyone got a word? And I got some very funny responses. And then this one guy went and prayed and he sent me a message and he said, I felt I needed to pray for you properly. And I've got something for you. I'm not really sure if it makes sense, but I feel like what God is. Well, interesting, the emotions rising up. I feel like what God is saying is you need to go and I'm going with you. It was not the right answer. And it was such a shock. And I remember just sitting there and crying, reading this message over and over and thinking, wow, we're going. But it never, ever crossed my mind that I wouldn't go because I wanted God's will. And I knew that the blessing was in God's will. But I also didn't want to go in my earthly self. It was a really difficult time for me because it was a wrenching goodbye. And I'm going into a lot of detail now, but my husband had ended up having to go earlier because his job started, but I was setting up the house. So in the end, I drove up by myself. And I remember in that drive, listening to Chris Tomlin's "Where You Go, I'll Go; Where You Stay, I'll Stay." And just processing that and singing and crying and thinking, God, it's hard because I'm leaving my family behind. I'm leaving everything I planned that was going to be so good for my children behind. I don't know anything of what's waiting for me there, but I will go where you go. I want what you want, but this is wrenching.
Yeah, obedience is, you know, it is that way. You know, it is that dying to self. It's that little bit, little by little, you know, God shows us that's that part of you is now dead and you're alive in me. And I've had a few of those experiences where, you know, I've obeyed, but begrudgingly. It's like, okay, God, I'm going to obey because it's you, but, you know, I'm doing it under protest almost. But when I get there and get in the middle of it, I realize God knows me so much better than I know myself. He brings me and shows me who I am by the steps he has me take and the fulfillment of obedience.
You know, we spent 10 years in the end in that place before there was another similar story that would have brought us to America. You know, we had never had better, like, deeper, more lasting friendships. We'd never been more fulfilled in ministry. Our children thrived in that environment. We'd never been happier. And it was God's goodness to us in that place. And of course, I'm sure if God's will had been for us to stay, I'd have been saying the same thing about what we left. But, you know, the scriptures changed as I began to understand what he was saying. And it was all about the pillar of fire moving and the pillar of cloud moving. You know, the blessing then moves. And sometimes place one is where God is and where he wants us and where we're blessed. But when he then moves on and he wants us in place two, suddenly place one is no longer as good for us. And we can be in a place that is blessed, but then overstay because we've got comfortable and suddenly it's not as good as it was before. And I think we avoided that in the courage that it took to obey him. And the blessing was greater. And, you know, when we talk about that stretching little by little, then the next move that came for us was across the Atlantic to a place that we'd never heard of and never knew anyone. And that was an even tougher move. And then we had teenagers at that time. God had prepared us for that. And again, I would say, I've never been happier. I've never been more fulfilled. I've also never been more stretched. I've also never been more uncomfortable. And he's growing me and he wants more and more for me, you know? And he tells me, like it says in Isaiah, your ears shall hear that word behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it. And every time he's doing that in his kindness and he's growing us.
Yeah, it is in his kindness. I was reading last night in Ephesians 1, and it talks about, you know, that God gives us all these inheritance in heavenly realms, but it says he does it for his great pleasure.
Yeah.
I mean, out of his great pleasure, it gives him pleasure to bless us and to lead us into more blessing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not just, let me see what I can do that to them. You know, let me see what trouble I can get them. No, it's his pleasure to bless us. Yeah. And to lead us along the way.
Yes.
Well, Lana, was there a particular experience or season that really significantly deepened your relationship, your personal relationship with God, and helped define your personal and even spiritual path?
I think probably the most recent would be this move to the US. It was a step up from what we'd done before in terms of trust and really leaning into him. I had to really practice more than I'd ever had to before the process of God being my source of everything, you know, friendship, fulfillment, validation, joy, peace, because as well as having that physical dislocation and sort of being cut off from my whole community and everything that I knew, but it was also a cultural change. And so everything, like all the creature comforts went right down to like my favorite food and, you know, that kind of, you know, just the really basic things when you're just completely in a different world. So it was hard, but when God gives you clarity for his will. And he does do that. I think if you are willing to be patient and wait and practice what it is to hear his voice, what his voice sounds like. You know, I didn't go from zero to get on a plane and move to America. You know, the first steps would have been things like go to school this morning and tell this person that I love her. And then I go to school and I find out it's her birthday and I didn't even know. You know, just every time, little steps, little, Lord, I'm willing to look a fool for you. I'm willing to be uncomfortable for you. I'm willing to take a risk for you. And so it's like an adventure that he's inviting you on. He's saying, okay, right, you did that. That was great. Now try this. Now, like you would do with your own child. Now let's try something even bigger that will be a greater risk, but a greater reward. And this move was like that for me. And, you know, he'd been very, very clear. All five of us then with our three children had been praying. God had confirmed it prophetically. We knew we needed to move. And then just before we were supposed to have our sort of visa interview, COVID happened and everything was delayed. All immigration was stopped. And then it was the process. And what joy for me as a parent to take my children through that process of waiting. But we thought we'd heard God, but now what is this? And delay and disappointment and what it looks like just to let God be God and let his part be his problem, which is what we were saying to each other all the time. Well, if God wants us in America, then he'll take us to America. That's his part. Because everything earthly was saying, yeah, you can't, this is it now, or it's all off. And then just the miracles, one after the other. Like we were granted a national interest exception, which is very hard to get. We moved on that. We, with the NIE, have 1 month to move. We had 1 month to sell our house, sell the cars, like just everything, close everything up, move. It happened right at the same time that the British government was putting in tax breaks for house sales. So all location services, local lawyers that dealt with selling houses, estate, everyone was booked up because in England, the process takes months and months. And we'd only had 30 days notice, but other people had had months notice to move. And, you know, everyone's saying to us, well, this will never happen. That will never happen. And then it did. And then it did. And then it did. So it was just so great to walk in the bubble of God has made a decision that now is the time that we move. And God is, it was like the sea parted. It was amazing. And then to get here after all that excitement and then to have the sort of crash back to reality of we literally don't know anyone. There's a total sort of language disconnect, culture disconnect, and that whole process of figuring things out, the kids each going through their own process of it. Your pain as a parent watching them struggle with that and figure it out, but also trusting that God knew that this was good for them, not just for you, and just all of that. So it was so formative in the five of us just digging really deeper in God and letting him be everything first. And then he provided all the extras again. But first he wanted to be that friend that we needed or that whatever community or whatever. So it was great.
Yeah, it is harder to often for parents to trust God with their kids than with their own, with themselves, right? I mean, because we want to step in. We want to step in and do what we can to ease their angst or their suffering and sometimes, not always, sometimes we need to do that, but sometimes we have to just step back and say, okay, God.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, exactly. If we protect them too much, then we protect them from the adventure. And, you know, the whole cliche, there's no testimony without the test. And, you know, I think it's our instinct to stop those tests for our kids. And it's, we deny them the pleasure of the other side of it. So I guess because we had lived in the good of what it was to go through those pain barriers to the other side of the blessing, we wanted our kids to experience it. And we wanted them to be part of the journey. So right from the beginning, when we're praying for it, like, are we even going? What has God said? And for them to hear for themselves that God has said, because a lot of that comes with the ownership of the vision.
Yeah, sure does.
Someone tell you, God is doing this and I'm going to make it happen for you. And this, you know, I've heard that's very different to you go and hear for yourself. You be sure what God has said to you and then you walk in that. And our kids had that. So when they moved here, they knew what God had said to each of them. It would be good for them. And so they each had their own journey and they're better for it.
Yeah, that's such a powerful tool for parents to use. It's not really a tool, but just encouraging the kids to not just hear from God through me.
Yeah.
But to hear God for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's important.
Yeah. So important. You've shared a couple testimonies, but are there any more that you can share at how you've seen God move in your family and your life through answered prayers and provision and unexpected doors opening? I mean, it seems like your whole life has kind of been that way.
Yeah. Well, it's all more of the same, really, in hearing God, Him telling you what to do. And then you doing it, even though for whatever reason, it doesn't make sense. And then walking in the good of what that looks like. So yeah, it's all in the same vein. I'm trying to think of another, but I keep going, my mind keeps going back to the moves or the kids, you know, the churches we've joined, you know, even that is a decision that is made in faith. There are lots of different options for us spoiled Westerners in terms Where will we worship? You know, what's going to be our community? And God knows each time. And He's made it really clear to me each time. And each time I've had a little bit more courage in asking Him for an extra, like, obvious, you know, if this person invites me for dinner, then I'll know. And actually, that was the story for our church, for our current church, because it's a whole long story, but I had it in my head that it was important to me that somebody would want me in their home for a meal. And I've learned now that culturally that doesn't happen so much. In England, that's how we connect in our homes. And so it became a bit almost like a fleece for me, right, Lord, that will be when I know that this is my church. What I didn't know was there was another person in my church at the same time who had never ever had somebody to her house for a meal. And it was a huge, it was almost like a fear thing for her. Like it was too hard. It was too big of a deal. And yet that morning the Lord spoke to her and told her to invite us for a meal. And that's another woman who knows the voice of God and is willing to take some crazy steps. And so I didn't know her part of that story until much later. And so she invited us for dinner that day. And I didn't even fully believe it, to be honest. There's a lot of, oh, we should get together, and then nothing would happen. So I was like, okay, great, let's make it happen. So we exchanged numbers, and sure enough, she made it happen. Within a week, I want to say, we were at their house, and we ended up sharing our story, and she shared her story. And isn't it great when it's not just about you? So, you know, God is bringing you all together. And in that one moment, she and I were both having a personal upgrade in the Lord, in His commitment to us and His love for us. And, you know, she was encouraged because she did something super hard for her, and she was used by God to be His voice in someone else's life. And I was encouraged because something that seemed a little impossible suddenly happened, with God going, okay, fine, I'll play your game. Here, go and have dinner at her house. So, you know, and it leaves me in no doubt then. I know that this is the body that He's called me to, that I'm supposed to be a blessing in, and I will be blessed by. So,
you know, I love, that's such a sweet story, because, you know, you've been sharing these big, huge steps that God, you know, had you take, moving away from family, moving across the ocean, and the miracles that He worked. But He also directs us in the simple little things, doesn't He? Have someone over for dinner. I mean, it was a big thing to her, but short of moving across the ocean. So, you know, every nudge from the Lord that we hear has a plan and a purpose.
It really does.
And an impact.
Yeah.
Lana, your journey, it's taken you from marketing and business into full-time ministry and advocacy for the people of Iran. How has God shaped your calling along the way? I mean, did you know from, you know, when you were a child that you were going to be an advocate for Iran? Or how did you realize that throughout your life?
Yeah, it's interesting, this word calling, isn't it? And I guess some of it is more about our awareness of our calling rather than necessarily the calling itself. Because I'm not sure that the calling itself has changed as much as my character, my readiness for it, my understanding of it, my appreciation of what it really is. I think he's known all along, and he's just given me steps, like that Isaiah verse, like, this is the way, walk in it, each step by step. Or that in Psalms 119, when it says, your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. Like, it's the picture I have of that is that very first next step is lit up. But we don't see the entire town lit up. We don't know where it's all leading. And I think that's his kindness as well, that I think he would freak us out if he told us the whole thing from the beginning. So, you know, I've always, Iran has just been deep in my heart always. The connection has been strong. My love for the country, my love for the people has been strong. Even after we moved to England, like, I continued to read my Bible in Farsi. I wanted that connection to remain. And I'd always said that I was called to Iran. I had said that always, that my call is Iran. I didn't know what that meant or what that looked like, but I knew that's what it was. And then, because I'm listening and the Lord is now guiding each step, I end up having a, you know, degree in engineering, a career in marketing. And each step is a little bit confusing. Marrying an Englishman, I always figured I would marry an Iranian or an Armenian. Like, it's, that didn't make sense, but I fell in love with him and the Lord confirmed it. And, you know, it was, okay, so this is obviously your best choice for me. Little did I know that God would use him to shape me, to better me for my calling. And his career path has enabled my ministry because we're here because of him. It's his work that brought us here and so much more, you know. So sometimes we think we know what, even if we know what the end game is, we think we know the best way to get there. And I'd sort of figured it all out in my head, and God had a much better way. So it's been a journey. And now, and I think there's more. I think there's more to come that I don't know yet. It's kind in not telling me, so I don't, partly so I don't get ahead of myself, even in my own ego, but also that I don't get ahead of myself in fear and paralysis, because how on earth are you going to do that through me? But I think now at this point in my life, when I look at how he's using me, I think about all the skills that I learned through secular work in business and communications that have really equipped me uniquely for this very specific task that he has called me to do. And, you know, our callings are unique. We all know that. Our ability to fulfill those callings is also unique. And in the way that he prepares us and gifts us and lines us up so that when our gifting and our preparation collides with our calling all at the right time, then it really comes together in a beautiful story. And that can only happen if our obedience is in step as well, because he's giving us opportunities, but we can say no. So we have to have the courage to say yes and take those opportunities and let it lead whatever meandering path it needs to lead to take us where it needs to go. I think that's exciting. And I definitely know for me, there are things that he's doing today that I think, wow, no way without God. And I want it to be that way. I want people to look at me and not give glory to me and not say, oh, isn't Lana amazing? I want them to look at me and think, wow, isn't God amazing? Didn't he do something out of this world that only he could have done through her? That's the ultimate aim, isn't it? And that can only happen if we're just busy with what's right in front of us and let him plan it all out in the way he thinks works best.
Yeah, I think of my circuitous route to where I am, you know, never. I mean, I started with a computer science degree and worked as a computer programmer. And, you know, God took me on a circuitous route to the nations. And never would I have dreamed of that either. But when we follow God's leading, when we just say yes, he's not asking us to bring anything with us but ourself. Lana, Transform Iran, which is where you are now, has really been a powerful instrument of hope and change. Share really how it got started. I know your parents were instrumental in that, but also maybe a testimony of how God's work through the ministry impacting lives in Iran, if you can.
Yes, there's a lot that I can say. We're careful with names and locations, but it's fun to share the stories of what God is doing. It started with a step of obedience. So my parents had been, were in ministry in Iran. There were sort of senior leadership in the church. The church was growing. We're now in the context of the Islamic Republic. We've had 10 years of war with Iraq, and that's just ending. So stability is coming back to Iran. People are starting to leave. and the government is looking more internally, and so it's getting a little bit harder to be a Christian. More Christians are leaving, but also more people are turning to Jesus. So in that sort of environment, the Lord spoke to my parents and told them he wanted to move them out of Iran, and they were very resistant at first. Like, we must have heard wrong. They both went and prayed and fasted for a bit, came back and compared notes. No, we're hearing the same thing. Took it to the overseeing pastor, which was the same pastor who was martyred a few years later after we moved out of Iran. He said, no, you must have heard wrong. We need you here. They said, great. And then he had a dream, and God confirmed it in a dream and said, no, I need you to release them. They need to leave. And he, of course, again, obedient man of God, knows the voice of God, came and woke us up early hours and said, I've heard from God. You did hear right, and you need to leave quickly. So we left very quickly, within a few months, and you can't take anything out of the country with you. So it was literally a leave it all behind. A very sort of Abrahamic kind of story in terms of how God calls him out of one place, but he doesn't tell him any more detail. Like, first, Abraham has to step away before then God says, okay, now you're out. Now this is where we're heading, and this is what's coming. And that's what happened for us. So we moved out. It was just before my 10th birthday. And then the Lord spoke to them and said, the church is about to be driven underground. Persecution is going to really increase. And I'm going to need you here to resource and strengthen and help grow what will become this persecuted but thriving church. And, you know, people say today that Iran is the fastest growing church in the world. And it's 99% owing to what God is doing and in his supernatural grace and kindness, and 1% because people like my parents have been obedient and put in measures to support this movement. So there's satellite TV, there's radio, there's digital church network. There's so much that they've put in place that supports. And my parents have always been pioneers. They've seen things ahead. They were the first to have the vision for satellite TV. They established it for Farsi and got it running. They were first to set up a digital church network, the first to set up an apologetic center. Like, it was always, now we need this, now we need this. So praise God for that legacy. And it's been very powerful in exactly what God called them to do, to resource and strengthen and help grow what will be this persecuted church. So the testimonies we hear are all tied into that, with, you know, the suicidal man will turn the TV on and suddenly hear the voice of God saying, this is who I've called you to be, and has a turnaround and calls us, and now he's a Christian. Or the isolated believer who doesn't know anyone else in their community, but now she's connected to tens of thousands of Farsi Christians through the digital church network that we provide. And, you know, Muslim clerics who come to us through the apologetic center, and they're sort of pulling at this thread. Oh, but what about this? What about this? And then they find truth. And they, you know, we've had testimonies of Muslim clerics leading other clerics to the Lord because they finally understood who God really is and want to follow him and want to tell others, and so on and so forth. So God is using digital media very powerfully, and now diving into the ethnic communities of Iran. And there, you know, the church is fast growing, but that growth is really limited to the Farsi-speaking community, and less than half of the Iranian population will speak Farsi at home. We've got 55% speaking some 39 plus different languages, and the bulk of them are unreached. They don't have Bibles, they don't have Christian materials. So now we're busy translating the word. And actually, just today I heard a testimony of somebody saying that, so we translated the Bible into Gilaki, never had the word before, never had established churches. We're now establishing a digital church community in Gilaki and developing resources for that community. And this person was saying to us that he'd been a Christian for years, but he'd never had the courage to share the gospel with his mother, who is a staunch Muslim, in her own, because it would have had to be in Farsi. And, you know, there's a disconnect with Farsi. It's such a controlling regime, and these ethnic communities have all these different traditions and cultures and music and the arts, and the government is stifling all of that. So you come in with Farsi, it feels foreign, it feels controlling, it feels outside. So he'd never really been able to, had felt comfortable to share with her for whatever reason. But now he has the Bible in her language. So he began sharing it with her, and now seeing her heart touched, she then connects with the digital church community. She has a whole testimony around healing from cancer from it. And now she's evangelizing other people, saying how, you know, the Christian God has healed me. The Christian God has spoken to me. So, you know, those kinds of stories, lives really having a turnaround. When Iranians know Jesus, they are exploding with it because it's so transformative. So now they're telling others, and the church is growing this way.
That is amazing. I love to hear the testimonies of what God's doing around the world, because, and you know, we're believing for God to start a massive awakening here in the United States as well. But it's happening. You know, it's happening in places as you know, what may seem to many as strange as Iran. God is moving there. He's at work. He loves the people and is calling them to himself.
Yeah, I think it's also a real strengthening encouragement for us, because Iran is sort of synonymous with evil, unreachable, hopeless, dark. And a lot of that is true, except that God then is doing miraculous things in the background. And when we hear what God is capable of doing and is doing, it's like Iran, I think it stirs faith in us to think, well, surely then he can do that in this circumstance in my life. Because look what he's done in this country that is gripped by this evil regime. And yet the fastest growing church in the world. I mean, how does that happen? Only God can do those things. But, you know, there's the prayer of the saints has paved the way for that. The blood of the saints, the sacrifice of the saints has paved the way for that. And God may not be asking us to bleed for him literally, but he is asking for sacrifice. And when we lay things down, when we're prepared for it to cost us something, then he can move in really great power.
That's very good. Well, Lana, as you look ahead, what do you sense God speaking to you in this season? And how is it shaping your next steps in ministry and in your personal life even?
I think it's that constant invitation for more. He's inviting me for greater intimacy, growth and dependency. He wants me more than he wants my ministry. And, you know, that's been a real fun exploration for me, in just that love affair between me and him, that I actually matter more for him, to him, than anything I can do for him. That constant mind, that's been good for me. And then it's just that stretching. You know, I don't want to stop stretching, stop learning, stop taking risks. And there's always more. So I feel like whatever the story may have been to date, I can rejoice in what God's done up to now. But that's history. God is the God of today. So what does he want from me today? Where is he stretching me today? Where's inviting me to partner with him in something new, for me to learn more about him, to depend more on him, to give him more glory, and to give him the opportunity to do more exciting things, to show off.
I think it's such an amazing revelation when we realize God is so much more interested in our relationship with him than in what we do for him.
Yeah.
Especially when you're working in a ministry setting. All of us are in ministry, whether we work in a secular setting or in a Christian setting. But when we're working in a Christian ministry setting, it's often easy to get our eyes focused on what we're doing,
yeah,
rather than our relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
So what would you encourage our listeners in their, how would you encourage our listeners in their walk with the Lord?
I would say spend time with him so that you can learn to hear what his voice sounds like, so that you would love him more. You know, as you get to know him, the love increases. And then when he does speak, no matter what it is, take that risk, do it with joy. It will be good for you. And you know, I think the baby steps, fine, it starts small, but as each step gets bigger, then you learn to trust him with more. He will trust you with more audacious things. So, you know, it just makes me think of the parable of the talents. Even they gave him a handful of coins, and those that did something with that, he then came back and gave them an equivalent number of cities. He trusts you with more. So take those steps, let him stretch you, stretch yourself, get those spiritual muscles working, and see where he'll take you.
Well, as we close, Lana, is there a woman of the Bible whose story has particularly inspired or taught you something meaningful, and how has her story impacted your journey of faith?
Well, actually, one of my favorite Bible characters is Anna, the prophetess. Testament. I've named my daughter after her. I love that there's no big sort of airs and graces and bells and whistles around her, but this is a simple woman who saw what God was doing right before her eyes that other people missed. And I just think that's so, so important that we don't miss what God is doing. She could have just walked straight past and nothing would have really been that different, but she would have missed out on being part of that celebration of what Jesus was and what God was doing in humanity at that time. She caught that wave. You know, the word talks about how the sons of Issachar knew the times. It's that knowing of the seasons. And when you look in the New Testament, Jesus is actually quite cross with the Pharisees who are missing it. Like you miss it. It's right before your eyes and you're missing it. So that's always the encouragement. I think serving in a country like Iran as well, and whenever we encourage people to get involved, to partner, that's the story behind it. Like, let's not miss it. Right now, God has his hand on Iran. He's doing something amazing. You could walk straight by and carry on with what you're doing, or you could engage with what God is doing. Don't miss it. And it's because it's a blessing for you. It's a blessing for me. It was a blessing for Anna. She got to speak blessing over the Messiah before hardly anyone else knew that he was there. So it's that partnering with him then in that dream, in that vision, and then it becomes an adventure.
That is very good. You know, Ephesians 3:20 in the New Living Translation, it reminds us that God is able through his mighty power at work within us to accomplish infinitely more than we might ask or think. Of course, it requires our yes. It requires us doing it. When he reveals what he wants us to do, he's able to just do so much more than we could imagine, as he's done in your life, Lana. God is able to meet every need, reach those who seem unreachable, work in us to transform us and bring God glory. Dear friends, nothing is impossible for God. Lana, would you take a moment and pray for our listeners?
Lord, I want to thank you for the amazing people who've taken time out of their day to listen to this story, and my heart that it really is the God story that they're hearing. Your ability to invite somebody into relationship, into partnership, your ability to speak and lead clearly, your ability to bless, your desire to bless, your ability to have a vision for each of our lives and a calling, and then to work it out in our lives if we're just willing to say yes. So I pray for that courage to rise up in our listeners now to say yes to whatever that niggling thing is right now in their mind. And if there's any doubt, I would say, what's the harm? Go for it. I remember the first crazy word that God gave me when I was a teenager. And I was thinking, oh, is this really God? Is it not? And somebody encouraged me and said, well, what's the harm? Worst case scenario, you'd have taken a step into the unknown, and it was to share a word with someone. You would have blessed somebody with a good word, and that would be it. Best case scenario, you've obeyed the voice of God, and somewhere in between, you've shown God that even if you're not sure, you're willing to take that step that you think is leading you to step. So take that risk. Practice taking risks. So I want to encourage the listeners, Lord. I want you, Holy Spirit, to be speaking to them now. I ask you to encourage them and to compel them with the clarity of your voice to take that next step of risk that will push them into a whole life of adventure with you. For your glory, Jesus, that your name will be heard, your fame will increase, and your kingdom will expand. Jesus, in your precious name I pray. Amen.
Amen. And now, dear friends, I bless you with an adaptation of Ephesians 3:20. May God's mighty power work in you to accomplish infinitely more than you could ask or imagine. Thank you for tuning in. Check out our show notes at hergodstory.org for scriptures and other information we talked about. There you can find a download. There you can also download a free 6-week devotional on women of the Bible and consider joining our company of women by supporting our Widow and Orphan Fund. We'd also love to pray with you on our 24/7 prayer or text line. So give us a call or text anytime at 855-459-CARE or email us at prayer@somebodycares.org.
Her God Story is a ministry of Somebody Cares America and International. To find out more about or support the ministry, go to somebodycares.org.